guys, before we start, I just wanted to give a shout out to one of our newest sponsors of the podcast, Ryder Industries. That's RYDR Industries. You can find them on Instagram. They have a website. They make a really cool thing. It kind of sticks down in your seat and clamps your gun, so it protects your gun from getting bounced around in the truck. You can connect a tripod to it so it can be quick and ready. I've been connecting my bow to it, actually, to kind of keep it safe and not bumping around in the truck when I go down dirt roads and stuff, just so that your weapon can be ready in the moment of truth. So we appreciate them. You guys should go check them out. Let's go ahead and get right into the podcast.
All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We got Trevor Thompson. Trevor killed like a next level deer a few years ago, and I'm super excited to hear the story. I've seen the pictures and stuff, but I was just telling them before we started recording that I've never actually really heard the full story. So it will be exciting for everyone to hear and kind of be able to learn from. So thanks for getting on, Trevor. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to share my story and get to know you guys a little bit more too.
Awesome. Well, before we get into the story, I just kind of like wanted to get help the audience know you a little better. Like, just kind of curious how you got into hunting and maybe a little bit of who you are, where you came from.
Yeah. So I grew up in Emery County, Utah. A lot of people don't know where that's at. A little town called Farron. I think population's still less than 2,000 people. Like, we still, even to this day, don't have a stoplight in our town. And I live here in St. George since 2009, but like most of my family still lives in Farron. And when you grow up in Emery County, like, all you do is spend time outdoors. And so most of my childhood was, you know, spending time in the outdoors or playing sports. My dad's an avid outdoorsman. Like, when you think of the epitome of a mountain man, it's him. And if you share some pictures, I'll make sure to include some in there, because it's like a mix between Chuck Norris and Alabama.
That's funny.
So he taught us, you know, it's me, my brother and sister. And, you know, my mom and dad growing up, it was like we spent holidays or vacations doing outdoor stuff. And he's always been like an avid sportsman and conservationist. He grew up doing a ton of deer transplants and helping out with conservation groups. And so I had that example from literally the day I was born. You know, and I've watched him harvest some giant animals. And he was always kind of one of those guys that was like quality over quantity, you know. He wasn't one of those guys that was like, I'm going to punch my tag no matter what. Like, he would leave 15 to 20 year tags with tag soup without batting an eye because he didn't find what he wanted. Like, it just didn't faze him.
That's hard to do.
So, yeah. And that's kind of the example we had, growing up. And, you know, I remember I think I was in sixth grade and we were on the Henry Mountains, and one of our good family friends had drawn a buffalo tag. And I remember we were on the four-wheeler. It was in December, and it was just bitter, bitter cold. And there was like this eerie fog and just weather conditions that are just kind of make you nervous. Like, you probably don't have any business being out in them, you know? And at 11,000 feet, we spot a herd of buffalo, and it wasn't even like a question if we were going or not. It was like, hey, take off your snow pants and let's go. And it's like, okay. You know, so we climb over 2,000 feet in elevation, and we end up getting up there, and he ends up shooting a buffalo, and it's like it goes western immediately. You know, it's like just stampede a buffalo, and you're trying to get out of the way, and, you know, he ends up killing this buffalo. And I remember, like, at that point, it was like, I'm hooked, you know, like that feeling of like, we scaled the most epic country, and just the way that that worked was just, it was like, I'm hooked at this point, you know, and things happen, life happens where, like, you know, other priorities take you away from hunting sometimes. I'm sure we've all went through that.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I was really big into sports, and I played baseball and basketball and football, and I ended up getting a scholarship to go play collegiate baseball, and my hunting time was limited. And I remember once I got done and was finally done with school, I had actually moved to St. George and was like, I have to start hunting more again. You know, it was one of those things that I just felt kind of a void, you know, and I still went on hunts, but it just wasn't, you know, what I do now or, you know, what it was when I was growing up. So it was really interesting learning this country down here for sure, because it's so different from the Manti. And it's so hot.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it sounds like it was in your blood too.
Yeah, and then, you know, I kind of, we've always helped with whoever has a tag, you know, it's all hands on deck, and that kind of led me into guiding a little bit for Albrick Outfitters with Taylor Albrick, who's an absolute stud. And then we ended up, my brother and my best friend Josh and I ended up starting our own outfitting business, which is the PSC Outdoors. It had originally started as us kind of doing some videography and photography stuff, and then led into us owning our own outfitting business. And we've been doing that for a few years now. We mostly, okay. our bread and butter is mostly buffalo on the Henrys, but you know, we really do anything, elk hunts on the Boulder. But we've been guiding for 6 or 7 years now too. But, and we try to sneak in our own hunts as much as we can between there. And I think what kind of sparked my interest in doing that, and this can kind of lead into what we talked about earlier with my Pontagant tag, is I had drawn, I think it was after 16 years, I'd drawn an archery Pontagant deer tag.
Uh-huh.
And I actually ate tag soup on that hunt. And I remember being like, I've hunted my entire life and still ate a tag. I've killed great deer. You know, I've killed elk, and I still ate my tag. And a big part of that was just me being, like, really fixated and hyper-focused on a couple deer. And I passed some deer that people thought I was nuts. But
yeah.
I remember after the experience being like, you know, if there's ever a time where a guide is valuable, it's kind of on some of those bigger hunts where you know you'll probably never get to do it again. And I just didn't ever want anyone else to have to go through that. And so we're pretty small as far as like our approach to guiding. Like if you were to book with us, it's probably a client that's hunted their whole life, maybe a non-resident. They don't know the area. Like a lot of people have been to the Henry Mountains their whole life and still never actually seen a buffalo, you know, like, cause they're just so hard to find sometimes, especially as you get later into the year and those winter hunts. And so we were like, you know, we want to take the little guy, not necessarily the rich trigger man. We want to take the guy that's hunted his whole life, shows up to camp, you know, is like, hey, I just want it to feel like we're hunting with buddies and make it a really cool experience for him. And hopefully never have that feeling I had after my Pontagant hunt.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And like you're saying, those Henry Buffalo tags are no cakewalk. So it's definitely good to have someone who's been there since, I mean, you said you were there back in sixth grade, so
yeah.
You obviously know
yeah.
it well.
Yeah, I've guided quite a few hunts down there on the Buffalo hunts. I mean, like I said, I've been down there over 20 years. And so far we're batting 1,000, knock on wood, but it is funny because they're not plains animals. Like my buddy and best friend that is part owner of our outfitting business actually drew the archery Henry Bison tag for this last January hunt. And we killed
a
buffalo. We killed a buffalo at 10,000 feet. Like they're not down in the plains. Like we climbed almost 2,000 feet in elevation, you know, pretty much an all-day stock just to get an arrow in this thing. And he ended up killing a great bull. But it's just one of those things where it's like, you don't know what you're looking for, and if you're looking low, you're probably looking the wrong direction. You need to look up. They're just crazy, crazy animals down there.
That's sweet. So kind of too, like what you said about your dad, he ate some big time tags, and then you said you ate your Pontsagant tag too. So like, can you go into that a little, if it's not bringing up too many bad memories? Like, what kind of bucks did you have? And I think I do remember you saying, like, you passed on some really good deer too.
Yeah, and like, it was one of those hunts I just – it wasn't what I expected. And, you know, that's my fault for not doing a little bit more research. Like, you think of the Pontsagant, you think of big deer – but what you don't realize is, like, it's not the type of hunting that I grew up doing. You know, like, let's dive into the biggest, deepest, darkest canyon. Let's spike out and, you know, go spend 2 or 3 days without ever coming back to base camp. Like, it's one of those units where it's like you literally drive around the roads and you'll see mega deer.
Yeah.
And so I just – couldn't wrap my head around, like, I'm going to step out of a truck and just shoot one of these deer. Like, it was just so weird to me. And it kind of shook me at first, you know, but we had actually found a spot in an old burn where there were some bucks in there that were just, you know, that next level. And I'm not a score guy. Like, I'll circle back to that in a little bit, but I'm just not a score guy. I love giant frame deer that are just massive. Like, I would rather kill a giant 3-point that's big frame to massive than like a 210-inch small framed buck with lots of trash. Like, that's just always kind of been my thing. And
yeah.
So we had found some great deer, and they were kind of in a spot where we could like do a spot and stalk, and they were tough stalks, and we did that. But you're playing with like park boundaries sometimes, and then obviously other hunter pressure, and so things weren't going our way the first 9 days of the hunt. And I passed on some deer. I didn't pursue certain deer, and people were starting to think I was crazy. But I was like, you know, there's 3 or 4 bucks that were just unreal deer that I was like, I'm not going to shoot anything but them. So I guess if I go home, then I go home. And we hit it hard, you know, I think it was the second to last day, we found about a 195 buck. He might have pushed a little bigger, but he was a really cool buck. We actually drove by him opening day, and I was like, no, I just don't want to step off the truck, out of the truck, and shoot that deer. And so, but that, you know, that afternoon, he was standing there, and it was like, well, at this point, why not, you know? And so I actually shouldered him really hard, and I don't know what happened or why I didn't get good penetration, but he had took off, and I was like, I think I hit him good. I don't know. And we went over there, and there was decent blood. And we tracked him for a little bit, and then we backed off. And then the next morning went in. And after a couple hours, we ended up bumping him, and he was sprinting and ran just fine. And so I was like, well, I guess that's kind of my hunt. Like, we spent the rest of the afternoon looking for something, but
yeah.
I went home empty handed, and it still stings a little, you know, cause you know, there's the odds are you'll probably never draw it again.
Right.
But, you know, I've always just had this dream of like, I want to kill a really big buck with my bow. Like, I don't need to kill a lot of small deer. I just want to kill one really big deer with my bow. And I feel like I'd feel fulfilled, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've always found great bucks down here between Pine Valley and Zion that we've chased, you know. And so in 2016, 2015, I had drawn second choice Zion dedicated, and I had never stepped foot on the Zion. And I was like, I don't even know why I did a second choice. I've been hunting Pine Valley. I don't know anything about it. And I was like, I guess we'll just kind of go figure it out. And ended up finding some big deer, and I was like, okay. And that unit, you know, I don't know if you've hunted that unit. It is so, congested during the archery hunt, because you have all of that BLM up by Kolob that's like landlocked basically, and you can't really access. And then
right.
you got private everywhere, and then you have like that section on top of Cedar Mountain that's public, and anybody could look at a map and go, yeah, that's probably your best odds of, you know, hunting without a ton of pressure, having to worry about boundaries. And it's just chaos. Like the day I killed the deer we're going to talk about, I want to say there was like 9 trucks at the pullout.
No way.
It's just congested. And, you know, there's been some people with like a big social media following that have killed big deer in the area that I've hunted. And so I think that has a lot to do with it.
I see.
And so I feel like I got kicked and beat down every year, because it was like I'd find a couple of good bucks, and everything that can go wrong with bow hunting goes wrong with bow hunting. You know, blown yeah. stocks or wind changes, or here comes another hunter, or here comes a guy on an electric bike or a four-wheeler, and it's like, you're not even supposed to be in here, but here you are, you know, just all of the things that could happen. And my dad and brother and I and our buddy Josh, we hit it hard for, I mean, 5 years, and chased some great deer. And I think it was in 2018, we'd found these 2 bucks. And they were both decent bucks at the time, but, you know, they weren't bucks we were going to pursue. And they were never apart. Like, and when one of them we called Dumps, and then we'd always say, oh, there's Dumps' little buddy, because they were always mounting each other. Like, we'd have the spot and scope on them, and they'd just, like, take turns mounting each other. And it was, like, the strangest the strangest dynamic you've ever seen with like 2 male deer. Like, and so we'd always be like, oh, there's Dumps and his little buddy, you know, that they can't keep their hands off each other. Well, that next year, Dumps blew up to like 190 plus inch deer, and everybody was trying to kill him. He had these big floater beams that came down, and everybody was trying to kill him. And he had like 9 lives. Like, he would jump the string, or guys just would be like, I don't know what happened. I thought I pulled off a good shot, and I just missed. It was crazy. Guys were launching arrows at him. It was a circus. And somehow he lived. And then in 2020, he came back and was a giant. And Buddy was with him and was about a 185 deer. And we're like, okay, well, you know, Buddy might get an arrow if he steps out. But, like, our main priorities, this buck we call Dumps. And
so, like, just for reference, like, what would you say Dumps was that year? So he's like mid-90s a year before, and then was he like 200 plus, you think?
Yeah, so he had actually migrated across onto the Pontagon on like the last week of the archery hunt, and got shot on the Heaton Ranch. I want to say he went like 205.
Jeez. Okay. Sorry to cut you off. I was just curious what we're talking.
You're good. And so we had been after him for a few days at this point, and our dad had gotten kind of on this backside of this ridge, and we just kind of surrounded this basin. And I all of a sudden just caught movement and was like, oh, there they are. And I was like, Dad, they're gonna walk right up to you if you can get into this certain spot. And sure enough, all the bucks in front of him walked out. My dad ranges 60, 60, 60. And I'm like, he's the last deer. He's coming. And my dad said he had stepped into the same clearing of the manzanitas, but he was 10 yards closer, and he didn't even think to range, because he's like, oh, he's just following the same line as the other deer. And he shot, and he jumped the string really bad. And so he's like, yeah. My fletchings grazed his spine, and then he took off. And so we all walk over there to just the most heartbreaking moment of your life. Like, my dad deserved that buck more than anybody, you know. And so
yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. And we, you know, we tried to find him the rest of the season, and, you know, he ended up getting killed, and that just stung even worse. And so fast forward to 2021, you know, the four of us are out hunting for the first 3 days, and we've seen like maybe one buck that we thought would be, you know, worth shooting. But my brother had had a Wyoming elk tag that year, and so we didn't even scout that summer because we were like, well, we'll just go hunt it. We know it. If whatever bucks show up, we'll just, you know, we'll see what shows up. And so,
yeah,
we hunted the first 3 days and seen like maybe a 175 buck. And on the fourth day, it was just me and my brother Tyrell. And we'd actually put a stock on like a really heavy, cool 3x4. Didn't work out. And so we went and got on some glassing points at like 9 a.m. And all of a sudden I get a phone call and he's like, you need to get to me like right now. And I'm like, okay, but I got some bucks spotted right here. And he's like, I don't care what bucks you have spotted right there. Like, I need you to get over here now. So like I go running up this ridge and I get to him and he's got his phone scope set up. And he's like, just look at my screen. And I look at his screen and like, I couldn't even fathom what I was looking at. Like just the most gorgeous, typical, and he's in this dark timber face where we sometimes see deer, and right where my dad had missed Buddy the year before.
No
and I'm like,
way.
Yeah, I'm like, what are the odds of that? And he's in the only spot that, like, if he could be bedded to where we would see him through the spotting scope. Like, there's no other spot on that face that if he'd have been bedded, we'd have been able to see him. Like, the only opening, he's bedded right there, and he's just laying there taking a nap at 9 a.m. and we're just staring at him. And I'm like, that deer's all of 190. Like he's over 190. And my brother's like, we can't kill him from here. And so he's like, you need to go. And I'm like, no, you go. And he's older. So he just looks at me and he's like, do as you're told and go. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like this whole big brother rank, you know? And
yeah.
So I start this stalk and I get clear up around him and I think that I'm on the ridge right behind him. And I'm like looking around and I'm looking around. My brother can't see me. And I like call him and I'm like, I think I'm on the right ridge. Can you see me? And he's like, no, I can't. And I'm like, okay, well, I think I went too far. So I start walking back towards him and I get my bearings. And I'm like, okay, I know where I'm at. I know where I'm at. Well, I have no cell service, no radios. So, and you know, at the time you could still use radios, but I don't have, our radios aren't working. And so
you're just on your own blind.
The last thing I heard on the radio was, I can't see the deer anymore.
No.
And I can't see you. And I'm 2 hours into this stalk at this point, and I'm like, okay, what do I do? And so I just start creeping in my socks, and I would walk like 10 steps and glass down this face that he was on that morning. There wasn't a single doe. There wasn't a single doe or signs of life on this face. And I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to creep, and I'm just creeping. And I end up getting right to the bed that he was in that morning. And I'm like, he's really not here. And I look down, and 100 yards away, him and this other buck are in the manzanitas. And I'm like, oh,
no.
Okay. And the other buck is pegged me. And it's like the sun's on me. The wind's fine, but the sun's on me. And he's just staring at me. And as slow as I could, I just lay on my back and I just don't move for like 15 straight minutes. Well, he gets kind of nervous and like starts to wander down the drainage. And then I see Buddy at the time we didn't know it was Buddy, but I see him start walking, following him. And I'm like, did I just blow it? Like, what's going to happen? And so like, I'm just going to sit here for a minute and just let him calm down. Maybe they'll still be in the bottom of that drainage feeding midday. And it's almost 1 o'clock at this point. So, you know, I'm over 3 hours at this point.
And yeah.
I take a couple steps to see if I can like get down. And just as I do, I see like a movement in the sunshine. So I pull up my binos and it's Buddy's Velvet in the sunshine. And he's like down off this little lip to where all I can see is his horns, but nothing else.
No way.
So I get my range finder and I range and I catch the palmation of, you know, his G2 and G3. And he's 64 yards. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
No way. He's there.
So I get down. I get an arrow. And the wind's kind of ripping. And I'm like, okay, I might need to compensate for this wind a little bit. And he comes up, and he ends up getting up on the same, basically the same level as me, but it's a pretty steep downhill shot. And he turns broadside, and it's like the perfect scenario. Like, his head goes right behind this snag of trees, and I have a 12-inch gap between two big ponderosas. Like, one's right over the front of his shoulder, and one's right behind his rib cage. And I'm like, okay, there's my shooting lane. And so I draw, and I'm like, trying to see how much I should compensate for this wind because it's blowing left to right. And so I kind of go back behind the shoulder a little bit just to give me a little bit of grace. And I just squeeze the trigger and I hear like the loudest crack. And I'm like, I just hit the tree and I'm like, I'm going to throw up. Like, I instantly am sick. And I'm standing there for a minute. I'm like, did I hit him? Did I hit the tree? And I'm like glassing the tree and I can't see an arrow. And all of a sudden I look to my left and that buck that's with him is sprinting. But he's all by himself. And so I'm like, did I hit him? So I start to creep down to this like lower part of the space. And about the time I do, I turn and look to my right. And I just watch his head bounce off the ground and he's death kicking. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just killed the biggest deer of my life. And I don't know what to do. And I'm so discombobulated. I can't find my pack. I can't find my boots, but I'm just like sprinting back up to the top of the hill to get cell phone service or something. And I finally find my boots. I get them on. I keep climbing the ridge and I finally get back to the top. And I call my brother and I'm like, I just shot that deer. And he's like, no, there's no way. And I'm like, I just watched him die. Like, I promise. And so he's like, don't move. Don't go down to the deer. Don't move. And I'm like, okay. Then I call my dad and I call my wife and I'm like all emotional, you know? And,
yeah, you just killed a giant.
Yeah. Like not 30 minutes later, I look up and my brother is on a sprint. And he never stopped running from the ridge. Like, he's just still running at me. And you can hear it in the YouTube video. Like, he's, like, breathing really heavy as we're walking up onto the deer. And he just keeps going, holy shit. Holy shit. And it's so funny because, like, you can tell he's trying to get his bearings. And I'm, like, I'm just so pumped, but I'm like emotional, and it's like this big emotion of roller coasters. And I get down, we get down to him, and as we're walking up, he just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I'm like, sorry, my alarm went off. I'm like, dude, that deer, if he's not, you can hear me in the video, if he's not 200, he's 199. And he's like, he's a giant. And I'm like, I don't care about the score. I'm just like unbelievable what I'm walking up on and looking at. And it's really hard to picture. I'm not a guy that like pushes him way far out. Like we're sitting right behind him. My arms are bent. And so I had a couple people actually go, oh man, what is he, like a 185 buck? And I'm like, dude, he grossed 201 and 5'8". Like, and it's just the most perfect, clean, typical ever. And, you know, so the best part of the story is we're sitting there skinning him and breaking him down after pictures. And we just get, you know, the whole deer loaded up between the two of us. And it's not an easy hike out of this hole at all. My brother finally found some batteries why he was up there, but I didn't have any. He's like, I've been trying to radio you. And I'm like, my radio's dead. Well, as we're walking out, the radio goes off. And it's like, we just hear, hey, boys. And we're like, hello? He's like, where are you at? We're like, where are you at? And he's like, I'm up here at the White Rocks. We have this point that we call the White Rocks. And we're like, how? Yeah. Our dad had left Barron and had made it there and hiked in like 3 hours.
No way.
He's like, I don't think I went under 90 to get here. And so he gets there and takes a little bit of the weight off of us. And it was so crazy and gratifying. Like, I had done this hike and hunted this unit, you know, for 7 years. I ate tag soup on the Poncegon, like, and, you know, that stings. And there's this one hill to walk out of this place to get to the truck. It's short, but it's really steep. And it's almost annoying because it's like I've hiked all day, and the last thing I have to do is hike this stupid hill back to the truck, and it just feels like the walk of shame. And
yeah.
I'm walking it, and I get to the top, and I, like, kind of get emotional because I'm like, I've walked this stupid hill so many times. And I finally, you know, fulfill a lifelong dream of killing a deer of this caliber with my bow. And, you know, we get back, and so there's pictures of me standing up there at this top, and I don't really share them because it's so revealing, but there's just these pictures of me standing at the top, and it's like, I've waited so long for this exact moment, you know, and it was a really cool experience. But
that is so cool.
You know, we get back, and, you know, CJ Ferguson here in St. George's Jackson, and he's like, dude, this buck is like next level. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of figure he's probably 200 inch typical. Like, I don't know. And like I said earlier, I'm not a big score guy. But I end up getting connected. I have some friends that are related to Dallas Smith out there in Leeds. And he's the, like, vice president of Pope and Young.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, let me score that deer, you know. And so he ends up scoring him. And he grows his 201 and 5/8. Net score was like 193 or 191. I can't remember off the top of my head. And he's like, you know, a couple months go by, and he's like, hey, you really need to come to this Pope and Young convention. And I'm like, for what? And he's like, you don't know how big your deer is? And I'm like, no. And he's like, your deer in the velvet typical class is the 65th biggest typical ever killed in the world. And I'm like, jeez. What? And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's the 22nd biggest velvet typical ever killed in the state of Utah. And I'm like, my deer? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. So we go out to the, I'm like, okay. So we get out to the Pope and Young convention in Reno. And my deer's up there with bucks from, like, you know, British Columbia and all over the world. And it's the fifth biggest typical killed with a bow in that velvet class in, like, the last 5 years. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, I had no idea, you know, that I'd killed a deer of that caliber. Because, like I said, I'm just not a score guy. I don't really care. And so you know, we get to do the whole award ceremony and everything, and it was really cool because they ended up inducting, do you remember the buck Cato?
Yeah.
That Bodie Gardner killed on the Poncegon. That's when they finally inducted it as the world record typical ever killed with a bow. And I'm like,
okay,
you know, that's a Poncegon deer, and, you know, sitting next to it is a buck from across the street off the general public lands, you know, of Zion. So it was pretty cool. It was a really cool experience, but it was one of those situations where you're like, I feel like I can breathe now, and I just finally closed a chapter on something that, you know, I've always wanted to do.
That's so cool too, that you did it on a general season unit and with your brother and your dad. that you had history with that buck with then. And then that's how it happened. Like, you would almost rather have it happen that way versus like on your Pontiac hunt, in my opinion.
And that's
so cool.
That's exactly what I think is so fulfilling about it, is it's like, it was the exact scenario I've always imagined, you know, just that really hard grind. It didn't feel easy by any means. And like, the thing that always keeps me wanting to hunt is like, some of these big animals survive winter, predators, tons of hunting pressure. And it's like, I'm the one that outsmarted him and got the opportunity to harvest him. Like, that to me is just one of those things where it's like, that just keeps motivating me to want to keep doing it, you know?
Yeah. And then from your story too, like, I think there's a couple things you did that we can learn from, and I think that maybe a lot of people wouldn't have done and would have not killed this deer. The first thing that I kind of like keyed in on was when your radio died and you couldn't see the deer. You said you've already been on the stalk for 2 hours. I think it'd be easy to be like, all right, I'll go hike back to my brother, try to get eyes on him again, or kind of not be, I guess, just not be motivated and kind of just walk through and see what happens. But you kept calm and you kind of just, like you said, you walked 10 yards in glass and you just stayed quiet and kind of just, I mean, you obviously didn't know, but you hoped that he's still in the area. I think that's hard to do, especially when you're not sure.
Yeah, it always feels comfortable to have eyes on him, you know. But,
yeah,
you're familiar with it from being down here. Like, it is so hot that those deer don't move. They don't want to move. I don't want to move. Like, so it's like, he's not gone far. He's got to be right here somewhere. And one thing I remember, my very first year bow hunting, we would steel hunt a lot. You know, we've never baited. We've never done blinds. We've never done tree stands. And I don't care if people do. It's just not the way we've hunted. But we steel hunted a lot on the Manti, because a lot of those bucks would get in those quakies and, you know, you could just creep through and walk right up on deer. But my dad would always say, hey, just take two or three steps and just glass, or just look around and just move really slow. He's like,
yeah,
when you come crashing through the trees, that's when you blow stuff. Like, get your wind right and just move nice and easy, and just two or three steps and then glass, and just observe. Like, you don't have to make it fast. We've got all day. And that's kind of what I kept going over in my head, was like, I've got all day. Like, it's 12, it's 1 o'clock. They're not going anywhere. And so I don't need to rush this. And it's like, sometimes you see a deer or elk of that caliber and it's like, we got to move and we got to go now. And I know that there's a sense of urgency that sometimes needs to happen, but I think in this case, and a lot of times, just being patient has really paid off for me. And that was exactly what happened that day. It was like, okay, just stay composed, move slow. He's going to be right here. And it just worked out absolutely perfect.
Yeah. I think that was the right thing to do, obviously. And then the other thing I kind of picked up on is when that other buck, like, had you pegged at 100 yards, I think, like, a lot of people, their heart would have started racing. They would have probably made some bad decisions, either try to fling an arrow from that far or just try to move in right then. But I think it was really smart to lay down and, like, yeah, maybe you lose sight of the bucks, but they can kind of calm down. And like you said, it's the middle of the day. They're not going to go far if you don't bump them. And then it worked out. They were there, and you were able to make that happen. I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, and I mean, as you can imagine, my heart dropped in that scenario, because it's like, I'm pegged, and you hate being pegged, you know? And so I just, like, I'm just going to lay down and pretend that they can't see me, and maybe they won't see me. I just remember laying in the baking sun. I didn't have a speck of shade, and I'm just laying there like, please just walk away, please just walk away. And, you know, sure enough, it worked out for me.
Yeah, no, I think I just can't even imagine, like, being in your situation right there. Like, just to be able to keep your composure and make those good decisions is, I guess, the difference between having a 200-inch typical and not. So I think that's an awesome story and a lot you can learn from.
Yeah, for sure. And trust me, I've made so many mistakes. Sometimes you just figure out what not to do. You know, I've missed deer. I've made bad shots before. And it usually, to me, always has come down to, like, I just could not stay composed. Okay. If you can stay composed, like, I think things usually end up working out a little bit better for you. But, you know, panic never solves anything. And in that situation, I was like, okay, just don't panic. Like, just stay composed. We're good. They're not going anywhere. It obviously paid off for me.
Yeah. So kind of on that note, I know I've had you for a while, but I just want to ask one more question. Like,
yeah.
If, like, knowing what you know now, like, what's something you know now that if you feel like you knew, like, 5 years ago, you feel like you would have killed more big deer?
I think one of the things is, like, for me, it's, like, go apply for other states. Like, I grew up in Utah, and I think it was always just, like, well, I'm going to play the Utah game, where it's, like, you know, you put in for general season deer, you hope you kill a decent buck. And then you just sit there and accrue your points for your limited entry and your once in a lifetime. And it's like, there's so many good opportunities out there to go hunt big deer or big elk. And I know sometimes it's expensive, but, like, I didn't start acquiring points in other states until later in life. And I wish I would have, you know, like, I'm 36 and I only have 7 points for Colorado. And it's like,
yeah,
I wish I would have done that sooner. Because the thing for me is I work in the mental health field. And so one thing that I've learned is time is the most valuable thing that we have. And it gets really hard to realize that there's certain things that we just don't need to chase. But time is the one thing that I feel like is most valuable. So the more time that you can go make those memories and just go have those adventures, the better, in my opinion. Like, I regret missing out on certain hunts because of other priorities when I was younger. And, you know, I just wish that I would have spent more time applying for other states and getting out more, because that's how you gain the experience. And then, you know, that's how you get to die with a lot more cooler memories too.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually really good advice. And I mean, that how things are going, that's almost what you have to do to be able to hunt every year. And I think, like you said, that's part of the journey is, like, learning some of those new units you've never been to. And just the unknown is what kind of keeps you going.
Well, and you know how it is in Utah. Like, it gets to that point where it's like you finally do draw, and it's not what you thought. You got outfitters everywhere, and trust me, I've been there. I'm one of them. But you have guys that are like, oh, I've got 5 bucks named, and I've been watching for 2 or 3 years. And as somebody that, you know, maybe wasn't prepared for that, it's like, this is not at all what I expected. Like, I personally would rather show up to Colorado on a unit that I don't know and find a really cool buck that gets me excited. And I haven't sat there and watched him for years. I haven't named him. You know, like, to me, that experience is way more fun. And, you know, we do Wyoming a lot, and we've had so many cool hunts in Wyoming. And it was that same thing. Like, you just show up and it's like, you're just hunting. From day one, you're just hunting. You're not sitting there worried about getting a hit list and scouting. And that stuff's fun and that stuff's really cool. And trust me, I do it too, you know, but that would be my advice is, like, just go apply to other states, go out and hunt as much as you can. And don't get so hyper-focused on this Utah game that we have, you know, where it's like, you're going to die before you probably get to hunt 2 once in a lifetime.
Yeah, no, it's true. No, I think that's super good advice, and I think you just got to make it happen, like you said. But yeah, no, I think just applying in states, getting tags, and hoping to get lucky, I think I think that's all it is.
Yeah, it's like I said, I would rather be outdoors somewhere in a new state than, you know, sitting here waiting for a tag here in Utah. So, yeah, that's kind of my outlook lately, and something I wish I would have done sooner. So if there's people that are listening that are younger, it's like, just start buying points. You know, even if you don't apply, just start buying points.
Yeah, no, that's perfect advice. And I actually learned a lot from your story. It makes me excited for the upcoming archery season. So I appreciate you taking the time to get on and tell us the story and get us all excited for the upcoming bow hunt. But just one last thing before we end, if you want to just tell the listeners like how to find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so our outfitting page is just PSC Outdoors on Instagram and Facebook. Mine's just Trevor Thompson, PSC. That's mostly just my personal page, but our outfitting page, you can find us on those, and we still have a couple openings. Obviously, I'm not trying to turn this into a sales pitch, but like I said, I love helping people fulfill, especially those once-in-a-lifetime tags, because it's something you'll never get to do again. You know, like you can always probably hunt general season deer, but those once in a lifetime, like they're a special hunt, especially those bison hunts. There's just something that's so majestic about, you know, getting the opportunity to hunt bison. So we'd love to help somebody. We're super flexible, you know, with as far as booking and just making it work for people, because, you know, like I said, we're not the guys that are taking the rich trigger man or anything by any means.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, and I think you guys are the best out there for that Henry's Bison. And then you said you do Boulder Elk. Is there any other units you guys guide in?
Yeah, we do Boulder, Pavant. We can do Manti, and then Beaver. So we're not too spread out. Boulder's off. Obviously our favorite. I think it's everybody's favorite.
Right.
We do have one rifle hunt booked for this year, but we might be able to squeeze somebody else in if we needed to. But yeah, we're just the little guys. That's probably the best way to describe us. We're just the guys that want to make it feel like you're out hunting with buddies and not just another client or just another number to us, you know.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, and I appreciate you getting on and sharing your story with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.